Welcome to the Guardian Safeguarding Podcast.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to our Safeguarding Podcast, as South Africa's only complete safeguarding company. Our mission and passion is to ensure that all people are safeguarded, especially the most vulnerable, like children and young adults. Through innovative, proactive solutions, we assist our partners in both schools and sports to develop an environment where the rights of everyone associated with them are respected and safe. These podcasts are a combination of valuable insights and educational segments that are intended for anyone who is responsible for safeguarding in their environment. Through conversations with those who work or have worked or have competed at the highest level in schools and in sports. As the Guardian, our belief is establishing a culture of safeguarding is a process, not an action. And only those who take responsibility for driving that process will truly safeguard children. Today, we have the privilege of introducing our safeguarding ambassador. He is one of South Africa's greatest pro-tier players of all time. Having represented South Africa over 200 times on the field, he then went on to coach the South African team before being called to duty as the Indian national cricket coach. It is our pleasure to welcome Gary Kirsten.
Good morning, Gary.
How are you, Mark?
I'm very well. Thank you very much. And yourself?
Yes, all good, huh? All good here in India at the moment, but it's great to be on the call with you.
I really appreciate you taking time. I know you're really busy, so I really appreciate this. You know, you kind of really wanting to throw your weight behind safeguarding and sports, and that being within the school space, within the club space. So I just wanted to ask, why do you think safeguarding in sport is so important?
Yeah, Mark, I've walked an interesting journey. I was the aspiring young sportsman. I then went into the professional environment where, you know, performance was everything. In fact, performance is so important in the professional environment that the athlete himself is virtually irrelevant. You're like a performance tool, you know, and as long as you can deliver results for me being the coach or me being the higher stakeholder, then you will remain my performance tool. And then I went into coaching and I realized that coaching is all about relationships and about how you can build a relationship in such a way that you can get the best out of someone. And that relationship can be very complicated. It can be quite diverse. It's across a lot of different platforms. And then lastly, Mark, I became the parent and I started to realize how emotional the parenting space is. And we want the best for our kids. We want to know that the adults that are coming into their lives are giving them the best opportunity to thrive as young people, and also, you know, allowing them to develop in such a way that they can handle the hardness of life as they get older. So I think safeguarding for me covers a lot of that. And I want to know, as largely as a parent, but also the responsibility as a coach, that you know, that's covered, that the people that are working with my children have the qualifications and the skills to be able to make sure that my child leaves their environment a better person, with strong self-identity, and yeah, kind of knowing that they're in good hands.
Absolutely. But I think it comes down to exactly what you're saying, is that where the tacky hits the tar is that you're a parent, I'm a parent, and there's thousands of people out there that sit in exactly the same space. And there is a focus of kind of going, how do I make sure that my kid, you know, all of those things are being met? We know that when international people who have international status, people who are recognized all over the world, when they start throwing their weight behind social injustices, and we look at safeguarding in one of those spaces, because, you know, certainly in South Africa, we've seen a lot in the media. It looks like all of a sudden it's gotten worse. That's when we see so much of that happening, we realize that when you and guys that have that platform throw their weight behind those social injustices, we do see people taking away, we do becoming aware and sitting up and noticing that these things need to be addressed. You've chosen Guardian to be the safeguarding ambassador to. Why the Guardian? You know,
for me, I had an experience 2 years ago where I went to coach in the UK, and before I left the shores of South Africa, my employers told me that I needed to complete a safeguarding course. And kind of was a little bit hesitant around. I said, what's this all about? You know, I've been a coach for a long time already. And then I went on the course and I was absolutely blown away by how little I actually knew around the mechanisms and the regulations that are important for a young person to have recourse on my coaching methodologies and my style and me working with younger people. And I realized that there's a massive responsibility attached to this, that anything that I say or do should be monitored, should be largely measured, I think. And there should be a way that there is structure around everything that I do as a coach. So I was really pleased that I had the opportunity to go on that course and just open my eyes up to how important it is when we're working with people and when parents are putting their kids into these spaces, that they know that there are mechanisms in place, that their kids are in good hands. So, Mark, I'm very appreciative that you've asked me to be the ambassador for the Guardian, and I think it's an incredible, worthy cause, and a company like the Guardian. Certainly in the conversations that we've had, I think can do incredible work in making sure we create a little bit more structure around understanding how older people work with younger people.
Sure. One thing that we've chatted about before this is the understanding or the realization, I think, that parents hold so much of the power in this space and very often don't even believe or don't even know that they do hold that power. Before we kind of look at this through the eyes of the coach, Gary Kirsten, through the parents, and just stuff that you and I have chatted about, like what would your message be to parents out there that, you know, to go, these things can go wrong and they do go wrong and this is what you could do better?
Yeah, Mark, that's a great question, because I'm a parent and sometimes I don't know what to do, you know, and to have some form of structure around it, you can do something. If you do have an issue and you're feeling that your child has been compromised one way or another, that there is a recourse, there is a place to go to. So that would be incredibly comforting for me as a parent, you know, and the fact that that option was open does, as you rightly say, allow parents just to be able to state their case, to be able to get out there and have an opinion and have a view and not to be silent. And that's what I am. I'm silent as a parent because I'm scared to speak out because will it compromise my child, especially when it comes to sport? You know, will the coaches then look at my children and go, they're the children of the parent who is quite vociferous around sport at our school. And, you know, the corridor talk will be careful of that guy. So I think parents are very scared and there is no place to go to. So what do? They keep quiet and they just say to their kids, you just got to get on with it. If you've got one coach that you don't like or a coach that you think might be, you know, bullying you or might be saying things that are inappropriate to you, you've just got to keep quiet and get on with it. And that's a dangerous place for us to be as parents.
We have this ability for parents to check the safeguarding status, of the schools or the sports club that their kids are at, and they can do it anonymously. You know, they can just go onto our website, go, my child goes to ABC school, please can you check the safeguarding status? Do you think that's something that parents would find value in? And if so, why do you think, I suppose you answered it, but the anonymity would be so important?
Well, first of all, they would find absolute value in that. I think what happens with parents is that they just don't know. There's nowhere to go. There's nothing in the environment which suggests, if I have an issue, this is what I can do. So absolutely, I think parents would, once they became educated and understood it, they would feel very comfortable that there was a place that they could go to air their views and their grievances and their disappointments. The fact that you could do it anonymously, I think would really help parents initially. But I think once there's a robust system in place and the schools take on the responsibility that this is important as well for them, then I think it would be a little bit more open-ended. I think one thing we've got to be careful of in this journey, because I'm now talking with my coach's hat on, is that you do get some parents that will take any opportunity they can or take advantage of a mechanism like this. And that might be their kid is not getting the opportunities that the parent thinks that he should be getting. And I'm going to air my grievances on a platform like this. So I think that's where you'd need to be a little bit careful. But I think the majority of parents really, at the end of the day, what do they want? They want to make sure that their kids are in good hands, well coached with qualified coaches who, you know, have been cleared, and they are very aware of and aware and educated around the importance of the things that they say and do to children in and around sports, especially in your more elite sporting schools, where we know that the professionalization of the game is becoming, you know, it's becoming more and more noticeable. And I'm seeing especially teenage kids getting treated like performance tools, because the school needs the results, they need the wins, they need to market their school as a good school to send their kids. So I think there lies a very important way that we can regulate that environment as best possible.
Absolutely. And one of the challenges that we often see is that people's minds go directly to the reactive. So kind of going, what's going to happen if, God forbid, something happens in our child's school or in our child's coaching space? But, you know, for me, the questions that we want to ask of the school is, what structures are in place to mitigate the potential from going wrong? So, you know, does the coach have first aid in case someone gets injured? Well, yes, we want them to have that, but have they been shown or taught what to do to mitigate the challenge of them getting hurt in the first place? And I think safeguarding is a very similar situation, because we want to make sure, like, does the school have policies? Does the school have a designated safeguarding officer? Are they doing training with the educators? For me, do you think that parents asking even those questions would be challenging for parents, for them to ask that of the schools and of the clubs? Like, do you have the clearances done, and do you have the proactive stuff?
Again, parents aren't asking that, and they should have every right to, and they should feel comfortable doing that. But parents stay silent, you know, because they don't want to compromise the journey of their kid. Especially on the, you know, I see it importantly on the sports field. So, yeah, we need to, I think, create more of that. I mean, maybe a good example for me, Mark, would be every day our children are coming home, and if we are interested as parents, we'll ask them a very standard question: how did your day go today? And they're going to give you a variety of different answers. They're going to give you an experience in the classroom. And if your kid plays quite a lot of sport, they're going to give you an experience on the sports field. And invariably, you will hear something in your week around a conversation that your kid might have had with a coach. Okay. And it's either going to be a positive conversation, or in my experience, and certainly listening to a lot of parents, a lot of the time it's actually a negative conversation. It's a criticism, you know. It's a comment that a coach made, which he thinks in the name of this being a better team, I can make this comment. I don't know how many times I've heard young kids say they received a comment from the coach that if you miss a tackle, you're going to get dropped from the team. Now, in my view, that's a form of abuse. And I think that coaches need to become more educated in understanding how they talk to kids. Because Absolutely. Kids are not emotionally developed enough to be able to handle comments like that. So I think there's a great opportunity for us to create an education around that for parents and for coaches to understand and to be careful of like how we actually interact with children every day. And I go back to what I mentioned earlier, Mark. I think we've moved more and more into a space, especially in our elite schools in South Africa, where kids are quite simply treated as performance tools. And we need to be very, very careful when we do that. Because when we treat them as performance tools, we use them for our own advantage. And that is to get the results that we need for the school.
Sure.
And once you move into that space, you move away from what your primary responsibility is as an educator. And that is development of the child. Developing his skills on the sports field, developing his skills in the classroom. And you then move into spaces. We're going to use these children to get the results that we need.
100%. You know, we were talking earlier and I was telling you that in 2014, there was a study that was done that kind of highlighted this, where it spoke into how, you know, legislation around the world has spoken into how corporal punishment, certainly in South Africa, you know, there's no corporal punishment in schools, there's no corporal punishment at homes now, smacking your child, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it's one of those things that sport just hasn't got. You know, sport gets to a point where they'll go, you know, if you're talking or you're ill-disciplined, you must run around the field 20 times or do 40 push-ups or whatever the case may be. And there is a space where coaches are almost licensed to drive the athlete. And to your point, it's not even a licensing, it's an expectation. You know, it's not about you as the coach getting the guys out on the field in the sunshine and getting some fresh air and a run around. It's about you as the coach doing everything you need to do to secure results. And you know, to that end, the child then, you know, does start becoming the tool to achieve objectives.
And just to add to that, Mark, I mean, I'm certainly not asking a coach just to, you know, go and have a ball out there and it's irrelevant what happens. And, you know, let's just become babysitters to this team. We're not expecting that, but there is a line that you've got to be careful that you don't cross. Yes. If you are going to teach a under 16 rugby team the skills that they need to compete in a league, then they need to learn those skills. And as a coach, you need to drive the value system of the team in terms of how they want to play. So I think it's important that parents understand that, you know, coaches need to do that. But I think there's a line that coaches need to be aware of that they can't cross. And that line is when a child comes home and feels that he hasn't had an enjoyable sports field and that he has felt that the coach has come hard at him and that it's been unfair and that there is recourse there and that there's education around how you do that. So there's that kind of line that we cross. Let me use another example, Mark, because I think it's really relevant in the sports space. I've watched a number of schoolboy cricket games over the last number of years, and watching the abuse that goes on a sports field from opposition to opposition is absolutely mind-boggling to me at schoolboy level. I just can't believe that coaches are allowing their players to behave that way on a sports field. Now, again, where does the line sit? You know, is it okay for a coach to really get his team fired up for the performance, to give it their best shot and to do everything that they can to, you know, secure a result because we all love winning? And my thinking on that is that there's no problem at all. But there is a problem when you are encouraging your players to behave inappropriately on a sports field and then to abuse the opposition. And if you don't understand that line as a coach, you are being highly irresponsible as a guardian of those children.
Yeah. Absolutely. For me, I think that when coaches are called out on doing that, they will take a step back and they do want to do better. I don't know if that's been your experience or if it's, you know, deliberate.
No, I completely agree with you. I think that we all want to become better versions of ourselves. And, you know, it's creating the environment where coaches are given the opportunity to understand their behaviors and kind of what's relevant and not relevant, you know. And I just think a lot of them don't. You know, I often ask my children, tell me about your debrief from the coach after the match. And I can tell you now that from all my kids, 95% of the time, it goes through the one ear and out the other. They're not listening. They're tired. They want to get home. They're emotional because they've either won or lost the game. But now the coach sits down and probably spends 90% of the time talking. And of that 90% is also looking for the faults. Now, if a coach knew that he's adding absolutely zero value in a debrief, and we could educate coaches to understand how that can become a really positive experience for a child, the debrief, you know, the after-match debrief.
Yeah.
And that includes parents as well. You know, when you do the drive-home debrief from a sporting event, you know, how can we create a positive experience for the child? And I think it's just an educational process. And, you know, certainly something we as adults need to become more responsible around.
Is it in your experience that in, you know, in South Africa, there is enough being done in the safeguarding space? So, you know, things like clearances, development of policy, those kinds of things. You know, first, I suppose it's a double question. The first being, number one, do you think that there is enough being done? Do you think that this is being adopted enough from obviously federation level? But more importantly, I suppose, is it being adopted and driven and educated at grassroots level? Because, you know, in the boardroom of a federation where the board sits and make decisions on what safeguarding should look like, there isn't too many situations where things can go wrong in that boardroom. It needs to filter down. The education needs to kick in. The policy needs to take control. Someone needs to manage that policy. So the second part of the question is, I suppose it's both parents and coach, but do you see at grassroots level, at coaching level, on the field, that there is a difference? Or do you feel that this is something that's being spoken about at high level and not filtering down?
I don't even know if it's been spoken about. To be honest with you, I think that, you know, I would suspect that very little is being done. Let's remember that, I mean, I don't know how many schools there are in South Africa offering fully fledged sports programs to their students, but I would say there's a lot. And I would say that there's a lot of people coaching sport through those sports programs, a lot.
Yeah.
So I would love to know, just as a, you know, a piece of research, for every person that is coaching sport, okay, at a school in South Africa, what credentials they have to be able to coach sport. Now the teachers that are coaching sport all have teaching degrees, and they probably have a, you know, they wouldn't be able to teach maths if they didn't know a lot about maths. And they probably wouldn't be able to teach if they didn't have some form of clearance to be able to teach, I would presume. And I'm not sure about that. So why would it be different if on the sports field? You know, I don't understand that just because a guy who has a hobby for the game of cricket and is interested in now suddenly becomes an expert in coaching cricket. My eldest son, who's now at university, in his first year at university, is keen to coach cricket in the area that he is studying. So he approached one of the schools in the area and spoke to the, you know, the head of sport there and said, I would love to coach cricket at your school. I don't have any certifications or anything, but maybe I could just learn. To which the response from the head of cricket was, no, you don't need a certification. I'll just watch you coach. Now, that for me is a highly irresponsible response. He needs to have a certificate. He needs to understand how to work with minors. And why aren't we putting these mechanisms in place? I don't understand it.
But then also to kind of go, if there isn't necessarily a need to be certified to coach, then what are the drivers to make sure that safeguarding is being addressed? You know, safeguarding is, you know, I would rather as a parent find out that the coach hasn't been able to teach my child the best batting and know that the person hasn't started sending inappropriate messages online. I think that I want both, but as a parent, finding out that my child can't play the sport versus finding out that my child is being groomed, the one is significantly more terrible.
Absolutely. I mean, in many ways, they would. My sense is they would go hand in hand. You know, I mean, but I absolutely agree with you. I think what's important for me, you know, if my kid is using sport as a vehicle to become a better person, and sport is important in our family, and we want our children after school to go play sport, it is a very important component to their education and their development as human beings. So I completely agree with you. If they've got an inappropriate adult who is spending 2 hours in the afternoons with them, that's a problem. And I think we've seen many examples of that just in South African schools over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But added to that, if my child is in under 14B cricket and I sent out a questionnaire to every parent whose child is under 14B cricket team, would you expect the under 14B coach to have some level of understanding of the sport and that he would have to have some form of certification that allows him to actually, over that hour and a half that he's spending with those children, to have some sort of knowledge and understanding of what the sport is all about, so that he could present some form of coaching skill to be able to help that person to become a better version. Would I want that as a parent? Absolutely. And I would be very surprised if most parents wouldn't want that. Now, that's not expecting an under 14B coach to have a level 4 coaching certificate, but certainly a basic understanding of the game. You could take it, Mark, even a step further into safety as well. You know, it's just, would you expect the coach to have some understanding of, you know, safety in rugby, for example? Yes, you would want that coach to have an understanding of it. Absolutely. So I think your question or your remark is absolutely appropriate.
I think, Gary, the point that I was driving towards is to kind of go, you know, we want to ensure that those that are teaching our kids to do the sport are at the very least understand how to coach. But I'm going, if we take it back a step, do we even know that something has been done to ensure that, one, they don't have ill intentions for children, and two, have they been given the skills to identify when something might be going on with somebody else that's coaching there? So if Mark is coaching the under 14s and Gary's coaching the under 15s, does Mark have any idea what he should be opening his eyes to say, Sherbet, I don't know what the hell's going on with Gary and those oaks, or this oak, that oak, or whatever the case may be. So I'm going, if we believe that they have skills to coach and they don't, well, the likelihood that they have the skills in the safeguarding space is probably significantly less. And then we go, well, where does that come from? And we go, well, that's driven from the boardroom. That's driven from the federation. That's driven from the policy. That's created where the policy goes, make sure that there is a change room policy. Make sure that there is a touring policy, you know, when you can touch the athlete, when you can't touch the athlete. Well, if we're not getting the coaching right, what is the possibility that we're actually getting the safeguarding right?
Oh, absolutely agree with that. And for me, that's been my own personal learning, actually, because as you rightly stated earlier, you know, when I grew up as a player, anything was possible. I cringe at some of the things that I still remember going back as a young player, the things that were said to me. I cringe. And I think we have a number of high profile examples of that, you know, just recently. So that has changed. You cannot coach that way anymore. And you cannot behave that way anymore as an adult to children. So that's been great learning for me. I think what I've become really mindful of in my coaching journey now, because I'm not working necessarily for a long periods of time with minors. I'm working with largely with young adults. But what's become very appropriate for me is how I behave in front of young adults. What are the kind of things that I'm saying? What are my behaviors reflecting? And am I showing, as a leader of those people, responsibility around the things that I do or say? Because in the end, they have no option, really, in the world of sport,
sure,
but to follow me. They have no option because I'm the leader. And do we abuse that position? My answer to that is, I think sometimes we go over the, we do abuse it, and we go over the line in what our expectations of those people are.
I think that, you know, to me, a coach-athlete relationship is very unique. It's not like many other relationships out there. I mean, if we think about it, and just bear with me for a second, give me a little bit of latitude. A coach will need to know the diet of their athlete. They're going to need to know what they're eating, when they're eating it. They're going to need to know when they're sleeping, when they're not sleeping. When we're talking about coaching of high performance kids, certainly in the high school space, we're going to need to know when exams are happening, when they are available, when they're not available. Can they come through in the morning? When are they awake? And there's a lot of communication that happens in that space. And so when we take all of that and we understand that, that seems like a hell of a lot of personal information that a person would have. The other relationship that looks a lot like having that personal relationship or having that personal information is a personal relationship. So if there was a girl that I was interested in, if I was a young guy, those are the kinds of things that I would want to know about what's going on in your life. But coaching creates that space. And so not that I'm saying that it's unhealthy, because I think most coaches are using it from a healthy perspective. But the truth of it is that if I'm wanting to be in a relationship with a girl, I'm going to take her down a road of grooming. I'm not talking about a young girl. I'm talking about, you know, a healthy relationship that, you know, even with my wife and I, there is a space where you go from what's inappropriate, which slowly becomes appropriate. That's kind of the steps you go through. So a coach is by default given that information of the person that they're going to be coaching. It's not inappropriate for a coach to ask those very, very personal questions, which positions a coach in a place where if they do have ill intentions, they could quite easily move into that space. And I heard a story recently where a coach, he was a football player in England, and he'd reached the top, and now he was giving back by coaching kids. And every Saturday he was coaching for a couple of hours. And at one stage he goes out into the parking lot after these kids get dropped off, because parents were dropping off their kids and driving off. And he says to the parents of the one parent that's picking up the child, "Would you give me your cell phone, wallet, and car?" And the parent looks at him and says, "Are you mad?" And he says, "Why not?" He says, "Well, I don't even know you." He says, "That's so bizarre, because you leave your child here with me for 2 hours every morning. And every Saturday morning, and you've never taken the time to find out who I am, what my motivation is." And I think that for me would be amazing for parents to ask those questions and realize why they're asking the questions. I think for coaches to get to a point where they go, Let me tell you who I am. Because if coaches are making it clear that I will tell you who I am and what I've done, it will cause parents to be able to say, well, then it's okay to ask the question. And I think that works both in the safeguarding and coaching space.
Yeah. Well, you've put that together really well. The four words come out for me there, which I'm going to reflect on now. But I think the interesting thing for me is I am the parent and I'm the coach. So I have sympathy for the coach and I have sympathy for the parent. And for me, I want to know everything I need to know about the coach as a parent. And as a coach, I want to know that the parents are balanced around their expectations of their kid. Okay. So the four words that come out to me that are really important is you've mentioned relationship a lot. So it is a relationship. Now, if we define a relationship, we need to understand what is an appropriate relationship for a coach to a player and from an adult to a minor. What is an appropriate relationship? What do you as the coach need to know? And what are you allowed to know? You know, if you say to the parents of the school that your kid has to be at the swimming pool at 6:30 in the morning for a training session every week. Basically, we as parents say, well, if we don't send our kid to training at 6:30 in the morning, he or she is going to be compromised in that sport because the coach is demanding that the team is there at 6:30 to do training. Now, for me, it's very important from a coaching perspective that I understand the dynamics of every child and if 6:30 is even possible, you know, for a kid. I certainly have not had any conversation with a coach when they have that demand. You know, they haven't come up to me or sent me an email and gone, we would like to have the kids to do an hour's training before school starts. Are you comfortable with that? I want to make sure if you're not comfortable that you're not going to compromise the position of your kid. Okay, so that's the first thing. I think the whole understanding of that relationship is really important. A word that gets used massively, Mark, in coaching, but I don't think is really understood enough, is trust. Okay, now, if we had to define what trust is, I think we could spend a couple of hours doing that and understanding, you know, what is a trusting relationship between an adult and a minor? What is a trusting relationship between a coach and a player? And I think we could go into a lot of detail in that. If my son comes home and has been what he would deem unfairly criticized by the coach in a performance, that is not a trusting relationship. That is not a trusting relationship because all the coach has done is he's dumped his emotion and his view on the child. And I can see that that response is a response from a leader to a performance tool. It's not a response, a trusting relationship between a coach and a player.
100%.
Okay, so I'd have a problem with that. The next word that came out to me was motive, and you used that word. You know, what actually is the motive of a coach? You know, is he wanting results so it's good for him, or is he developing children? Is he actually in the game to develop skill and to develop kids, or are the results very important for him because he has aspiration in his coaching space? And then the last word for me that came out of that, Mark, was manipulation. And is, I think it's very easy in an adult minor situation to manipulate. It's very easy. And I don't think there are enough checks and balances there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. I think that we're both very passionate about this. I think, you know, you and I could go on for days and you know, to reiterate what I said in the beginning, I'm very, very grateful for you. And I think it's important to realize that there is a need for us to be looking at safety and making sure that the coaching is right. There is a need for us to look at safeguarding. And I think for me, the biggest takeaway from this thing is if we can get parents to be asking those questions and we can get coaches to be open with the information. Hi, My name is Gary Kirsten. I'm a level one coach and I've done all my necessary safeguarding. And this is what's going on. Because when those coaches are saying that, now when I take my kid to the next place, I'm going, yeah, it actually is okay for coaches to have this conversation. So let me ask this guy or let me ask this one. So it needs to become something that we talk about. And I think, you know, throwing your name and throwing, you know, your position behind what we're doing, we're very, very grateful for. And obviously from our side, I think that the idea of having, you know, sports greats, sports heroes stand up and say, this is what we need to be doing would be massively valuable, you know, to the end that I've...
Yeah, sorry, Mark, if I could just add to that, because I don't want to miss the opportunity. I think often when you try and set up some structure or build some framework around safeguarding, sometimes we overlook just simple messaging, you know, and how damaging simple messaging can be.
Sure.
And whether minors should have an opportunity to be protected just in simple messaging. Now, let me share with you some examples, because storytelling and sharing examples is a wonderful way for people to understand. And that's how we educate. But when a coach makes a comment to a player that if you miss another tackle, you'll be dropped from the team, is that appropriate messaging? Okay. Placing massive expectation on a young person, putting pressure on them in such a way that they fear the coach.
Yeah. Okay.
Is that appropriate? Now, the answer is no, it's not appropriate. 100%. That is uneducated messaging, and you should be called to account for that. Now, I don't know how many times just in the last 10 years I've heard that comment. A comment that a coach will use the fear tactic to try and get a result. Okay, so that is totally inappropriate. When I was 18 years old, I was told by my under 19 coach at my school that if I don't score 1,000 runs in the season, we're not going to have a good season. Now, that is a fear tactic. Okay, that is wholly inappropriate.
100%.
Okay, and I think that where we can really add some value, or certainly just highlight and talk into the space a little bit more, is just the appropriate messaging to young people. And I think that sits in the safeguarding space, and certainly we can build some education around that.
I think that, you know, Gary, it does sit in the safeguarding space, but I think for me, the crux of safeguarding is respect. You know, if I come and I say to you, you know, just by pure law, I say, Gary Kirsten stole my car. There is a space where we will go to court and Gary has an opportunity to defend himself. If I say to the child, you had a terrible game because you missed six tackles versus you missed a couple of tackles, what's going on? As the coach, I can learn what caused that. But when I'm putting my expectation on you and I'm telling you that when you fail to meet my expectation, you have failed. You don't have the ability to give me any mitigating circumstances as to why that might have happened. You may be coming and mom and dad had a fight on the car on the way to school that morning. You may be sitting with a pet that has passed away. You may be sitting with things that are, you know, outside of the sporting space. And so I think the difference between, you know, somebody who's being a manager of a tool versus somebody who is being a coach of an athlete is the understanding that there is a laugh that happens, which is bigger than those 2, 3 hours, 4 hours, however long the competition takes on the field. It's bigger than the 2 hours that you're training in the pool or on the field or wherever the case may be. It's about realizing that this human being will be better off if they have a greater skill, but that can't be the beginning and end of what this human being plays in your life.
Yeah, great comment. And completely agree that you have got a much bigger responsibility as a leader of a young person, much bigger responsibility other than just, you know, helping them become more skillful.
The responsibility is making sure that at some stage, this human being becomes the best version of themselves.
Yeah.
And you've got to be the best version of yourself. You've got to be able to look at yourself and go, how can I do better? Because 80%, we know this, 80% of what children hear and 80% of communication isn't verbal. It's the way we behave. It's our tone. It's our accent. It's how we communicate. It's how we deliver the package. As a coach, the course is going to teach you what's the package. How you deliver that makes such a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, certainly the comments that I've had as a parent from my kids who are really into sport, okay, I've never heard from my kids, the coach was really skillful and taught me a lot. Very seldom do I hear that.
Yeah.
What do I hear? Dad, and I enjoy playing in his team. Or dad, he just shouts at us all the time. Now, I think what we need to find is the perfect spot there. What do we need to find? Dad, the coach really helped me grow my game and I became more skillful and I really enjoyed playing in his team. Now, why can't we have both?
We can. I think we can. I think people just need to be guarded. I think people just need to be respectful. That's the bottom line. We need to be respectful of each other. You winning on the field, it's got nothing to do with me. It's got to do with the fact that I might be able to identify that we've missed some skills and the next game we're going to do better. I understand that there is a need to compete. I understand that there is a need to prove yourself. I get all of that. But that cannot be what defines us as human beings. What defines us as human beings is certainly from a coaching perspective is how is this person's life better because I was in it? And if they are now winning trophies and filling the cabinet with trophies, but they are on a line for depression and they're cutting and they are, you know, they're really falling apart. Well, did we win? I don't think we won. Those trophies say nothing if we're not getting the human being right.
That's why I'm a big, big advocate to ban rankings at school, sports rankings. It is the worst thing that you can do for everyone, all stakeholders, for parents, for coaches, and for players. Ban rankings. Let them play sport. Let them enjoy what they're doing. Let them be the best version of themselves. Let them try win as many games as they can. If they're a talented team, they are going to win more games than they're going to lose. If they're not a talented team, they're not going to win more games than they lose. Who cares? Who cares? Okay. It's ban rankings and allow the kids to go and play without the fear of expectation and performance. We must not treat young people as performance tools, please.
I agree with you.
Treat them as human beings. They've got to develop as people. And we've got a massive responsibility as adults to make sure that they have that opportunity to do that.
Okay. Gary, I want to start wrapping up here, but if I ask you a fear as a coach from a safeguarding perspective, if I had to say to you, like, to find out something, would it be, you know, what would the thing for you as a coach that be, Shivitz, if that all of a sudden came, I'm not quite sure what I'd do with that. Like, is there something that you think might be a reason why coaches don't go down the road of safeguarding or do go down the road or should go down the road of safeguarding? What would your opinion in that space be?
I would say that speaking with my coach's hat on is that we absolutely need to be more educated and understanding how to work with young people, every single coach. And I had that experience just a few years ago when I did complete this course. It wasn't a long course, but it certainly opened my eyes the way I message. And I think we spend a lot of time as coaches messaging. and what's appropriate messaging and what's not appropriate messaging. And
yeah.
messaging is communication, and communication is the life of a coach, is communication. So how we communicate, what is our body language, what is our tone, what is our energy, and you know, shouting and screaming at people and instructing people what and telling them what to do is one form of communication, not necessarily very healthy, but it is a form of communication. Asking people questions, demonstrating to them how they should perform a certain skill, just your energy around people is another forms of communication. And we need to really become more educated in that environment. And I think also just more educated in understanding what is appropriate behavior, not appropriate behavior as coaches.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Gary, thank you very much for your time. And like, you know, as I've mentioned, you know, we really appreciate having you here. But as a closing message, as a message to, I suppose, coaches and parents out there, what would be kind of a final wrap up that you'd like to leave people with?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. It's been great chatting to you around it. And you know, for me, I am the coach, I am the parent, I'm the ex-player, as I've mentioned before. But I think it's just important for us to become a little bit more aware around it. So, you know, for me, it would be to the schools specifically and to the coaches, just to walk a journey of education. Let's all do it. You know, I think safeguarding is really, really important because we are working with young people. And just to start having a, you know, a better understanding of it and maybe just learning more. You know, you might have good experience in working with young people. You've been a teacher for a long time. You've been a sports coach for a long time. So you do have a good understanding. There's no reason why we can't become more educated. I think as a coach, I've become a lot more educated just in the last few years because I hang around people who are learning and wanting to become better versions of themselves. So let's walk this journey. Safeguarding is important. As I said earlier, I was forced to do a safeguarding certificate a few years back because I was only allowed to coach in England if I had it. And it gave me some really good insight as to the way I coach and to my learning. So I would encourage schools to take it on specifically to, you know, really encourage their coaches to become better educated around the space. And, you know, the Guardian provides a great opportunity for us to complete a certificate of safeguarding just to stay up to date with what's relevant in modern day leadership of young people.
Awesome, so much. And thank you for, you know, being a voice and an advocate and an ambassador in this space, because I think it's so, so important that parents and coaches get to hear that this is something that needs to be taken seriously.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me. And I just love the name, The Guardian, because for me, when I look at that name and I understand my role in it, I realize, you know, how important it is that I get my stuff together properly, yeah, because that responsibility is massive. So yeah, thank you for the opportunity. I'm pretty passionate about it because I think I've had my own personal scarring around poor leadership and poor coaching. And I've also had really positive experiences around coaching as a player as well, where, you know, the best coaches got the best out of me and were definitely my, I would have used the word maybe potentially father figures, but they were my guardians. I had a very positive experience with a coach when I was 18 years of age, because my father passed away when I was 17. So to have someone come into my life and actually act as my guardian, as my my coach, and the kind of behaviors that he showed me to be the best version of myself was just a great template for me to, you know, to say, that's it. That's what you need to do. And that doesn't mean just being nice, I might add. He was pretty direct with me when I needed to be. He showed me discipline and what kind of discipline was required for me to be the best version of myself, but he was very smart in the way he did it. And for me, I wanted to play for him. I enjoyed playing for him. I enjoyed being in his environment. I enjoyed myself and enjoyed my cricket when he was around, because he challenged me. He made me the best version of myself. So this is very important stuff, and we need to get it out there.
100%. Thank you so much. Thank you very much for your comments and your time. And we will chat soon.
Cheers, Mark.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. To learn more about safeguarding, you can visit our social media platforms or our websites, www.theguardian.co.za.